So let us continue our Bible study tonight with the book of 2 Corinthians. And I'm going to refer to some commentary just for background in 2 Corinthians. And I'm going to read some of it, so I want to make sure everybody in cassette tape land knows this is from the Liberty Bible Commentary on the volume on the New Testament, page, I don't have the page number, but that's where it is. 2 Corinthians, we'll note, is actually the fourth letter that Paul wrote to the church at Corinth. We don't have all four, but there were four. They refer to a previous epistle that was written prior to 1 Corinthians. They refer to that in 1 Corinthians. So 1 Corinthians was actually the second letter he wrote. And then in 2 Corinthians, it refers to a sorrowful letter that Paul wrote between 1 and 2 Corinthians. They, at the church at Corinth, didn't react too well to this rebuke from the Apostle Paul. And Paul wrote him a scorcher. And he regretted having written it because he thought he was too harsh. And he points out in 2 Corinthians that you have to deal with even errors amongst doctrine in love and gentleness, or you can just drive people completely away. So he regrets ever having written that one. Fortunately, it doesn't survive, so we can't read it and see how he blasted them. So, and then we have 2 Corinthians, which is the fourth letter. The second canonical epistle, which is 2 Corinthians here, has several features which distinguish it. His first epistle, that is 1 Corinthians, is both practical and instructional. 2 Corinthians, not so much. 2 Corinthians is intensely personal and autobiographical. He's more moaning within himself that maybe he was too hard on the believers at Corinth. He's still going to help encourage them along the way, but he's going to do it in a much more loving tone than he did before. So 2 Corinthians was written to the church at Corinth, which was founded on Paul's first visit to that city. Since then, he's ministered in Ephesus for what? About 3 years. And Paul has learned a great deal about the problems that have been growing in this little assembly. They had problems with worldliness, that is getting caught up in sexual immorality and such things. Internal wranglings, you know, they were arguing, I came to faith from Paul's teaching, well, mine was Apollos and mine was Peter, so I'm better than you. And that kind of wrangling within a congregation is simply not of God. What did Messiah tell the disciples? You'll know them by their love one for another. Which means we should love and reach out and encourage our brothers and sisters in Messiah, not fight with them, not make them feel bad, not trying to beat them down or to exalt ourselves over them. If you love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself, you want to encourage your brother or sister. You want to lift them up. You want to teach them, build them, encourage them. What is it I like to say? When you find someone who knows more than you do, learn from them. When you find someone who knows less, teach them. And that way we're always building each other up. That's why I like Yabit so much. If you guys know something that I've missed, I want to know. And also, problems with doctrinal defections. That is, people who said, well, I know, Paul, you taught us this, but we're not going to do that. We'll do these other things you taught us, but we don't want to do that. And they continue to fester in spite of Paul's efforts in the first epistle. That's why he sent that sorrowful letter where he really flamed them, because they didn't get it. But we're going to find in 2 Corinthians that there's still opposition to Paul's ministry. There are people, even in the church at Corinth, that don't believe Paul should be an apostle. They think Paul's in it for the money, even though he never took a dime from the congregation. So where they got the ideas, I don't know, except that there's false teachers always coming around trying to stir up trouble and teach false doctrine and undermine those who are teaching the true doctrine. That's just one of Satan's tricks. And there's a party that's associated itself with Messiah that we're going to read about in chapter 10 and chapter 11 that are particularly opposed to Paul. And the leader of that group has been especially obnoxious to Paul. We're going to read about that in chapter 10, verses 7 through 11. So when news of these conditions reached Paul at Ephesus, he made a brief visit to Corinth in order to deal with them. And 2 Corinthians is going to talk about that, the fact that he made a brief stop. But then he promised that he would go back, and he didn't get back. So there are people who are saying, Paul lied to us, he doesn't care about us, he was only here for the money. We didn't take any money. But I understand those arguments. So at this time, and that visit between 1 and 2 Corinthians, the personal vendetta that was just referred to was really evident to Paul, and Paul was really hurt by it. So upon his return to Ephesus, he was so distressed that he penned a letter to the church of such a severe nature that he later regretted ever having sent it. And he sent it by way of Titus. And it says here in a note, it's probable that this letter was lost in its entirety, but I think that's a good thing. We really don't want to read that. In 2 Corinthians, the charges leveled against the Apostle Paul by this group are indicated in a number of passages we're going to find in 2 Corinthians. For example, Paul was accused of being fickle. He said he was going to come, but he didn't come. Others accused him of being authoritarian. Who are you, Paul, to tell us what to do? Some accused him of ministering without proper credentials. The Apostle Paul, the one who met the Lord personally and was tutored by Messiah, they thought he didn't have proper credentials. We find that, what's that?
And Gamaliel.
Yep, and Gamaliel. We find that in chapter 3. In chapter 10, they've accused him of cowardice. The Apostle Paul, of cowardice. Can you tell some of these are false? In chapter 11, he references the fact they accuse him of having failure to maintain proper clerical dignity. They accuse him of presumption and of fleshliness. We'll see if those responded to in 2 Corinthians. Paul was not a little mousy person, was he? So Paul's going to push back. And Paul accuses those who are accusing him of corrupting the word. He'll discuss that in chapter 2. He says they were deceptive. He says they were Jews masquerading as ministers of Messiah, which is probably going to mean they're the ones that are advocating that you have to convert to Judaism and keep the law perfectly before Messiah can save you. The same problem he ran into in Galatia. The same thing that was addressed in Acts chapter 15. He told them they were domineering and bold. I'm not sure bold is a bad thing, but he does call them that. And he says that they lack the spiritual courage to step out on their own and start their own ministry. Remember Paul saying, I've never ridden on anybody's coattails. I don't go where the gospel's already being proclaimed. I go out into new areas. He tells these people that if you had the courage, you would go out and start your own congregation. Quit messing with mine. And the commentator here says, thus it was no small wonder that the apostle was seriously concerned about the spiritual well-being of the church at Corinth. But when Titus, who's the one who carried that sorrowful letter to Corinth, returned, he gave Paul a report that the response of the Corinthians and subsequent development was positive, that they have made positive changes. They've actually been listening and accepting some of the rebukes that Paul's laid out. And Paul would have liked to have gone back to Corinth then to see them, but because of the uprising of the silversmiths in Acts chapter 20, verse 1, that Diana of the Ephesians thing we read about, that kept him from being able to go. He stopped at Troas and apparently was engaging in a very fruitful evangelistic effort in that city. But Titus tarried much longer than the overstrained, impetuous apostle could stand. That is, he was waiting for Titus. So he discontinued his ministry in Troas and crossed over to Macedonia, expecting to meet Titus somewhere along the Via Egnatia, which is a road, the great highway which connected the chief Macedonian towns along the coast. And it was there with great relief that the apostle finally met up with Titus and got the report that they were genuinely grieved by that painful letter, that sorrowful letter. And the offending person has finally been dealt with. He discusses that in chapter 2. And the great majority of the Corinthians were really loyal to the Apostle Paul and followed his doctrine just as he thought. He thought it was a small subset. You know, like Satan putting little tares in the midst of the wheat. So the commentator says, thus it's not surprising in the first seven chapters of 2 Corinthians to see the apostle pour out his thanksgiving to God in encouragement the progress the assembly was making. Could you imagine how disheartening it would have been to Paul if he keeps hearing about these little congregations he started around the Gentile world? They flare up and then collapse. They flare up and collapse. How disappointing and disheartening would that be? So to hear that they're taking the direction and they're implementing it and they're trying to move forward and do better in the Lord is very encouraging to Paul. So as soon as he got the word from Titus, he sits down and writes 2 Corinthians to tell him how grateful he is and how much he rejoices in the Lord that they're responding affirmatively and properly to his instructions. Okay, back to your notes. There are seven purposes or seven reasons that Paul expresses in writing 2 Corinthians. First, he wanted to explain his sufferings in Asia, that is the Diana of the Ephesians incident in Ephesus, and how that kept him from getting back to them as he wanted to. So number two, to justify himself in his change of plans about returning to Corinth. To me, those two are intertwined. Number three, to instruct them as to the treatment of the offender. Remember the person in 1 Corinthians chapter 5 who was having immoral relations with his father's wife? He's been disciplined, and now Paul's concerned that the discipline may be going too far. It's had its effect. The man has repented. And now Paul encourages them to restore him back to the congregation in love. Because that was the purpose of the discipline. It wasn't to punish anybody. It was to bring him to repentance and the desire to come back into the fold. And number four, to express his joy at the good news of their progress. To attain full reconciliation with himself because of the people that had opposed his ministry. Number six, to urge the Corinthians to participate in the collection for the church at Jerusalem. Apparently, they didn't take chapter 16 to heart. And finally, to establish his authority as an apostle, lest he let anyone continue to question whether he is truly worthy to be an apostle of the Lord or not. For those of you who are sleeping, given that long introduction, time to wake up and let's get to chapter 1, verse 1. Nobody really is. But the people on cassette tape land don't know that. 1 Corinthians is over. We're on to 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 1, which begins Paul. That's the way most of his epistles start. What's an epistle? It's a letter. It's a letter. And back in those days, you started a letter with who you are that's sending it. Today in America, we put first what? Who it's going to. And then at the bottom, who sent it. Back in those days, you put it right at the top, who's sending it. So they know whether they want to read it or not. So Paul, an apostle. What's an apostle? One who writes an epistle. No, an epistle is a letter. Apostle is Hebrew sheliach. It means a sent one. One that has been sent by the congregations or the churches out to take the gospel message out where it hasn't been before. He's an apostle of Yeshua the Messiah. What does Yeshua mean? Salvation. What does Messiah mean?
Anointed.
The anointed one. That is, he says right off the bat, Yeshua is the promised Messiah from the days of the Torah. Moses wrote about Messiah who was to come. What did Moses call him in Deuteronomy 18?
The prophet?
Yeah, the prophet. There's going to be a prophet like me, and him you'll listen to. Let's go back and look at that. Deuteronomy chapter 18, because Paul is saying Yeshua, whose name means salvation, is that prophet that Paul wrote about. Deuteronomy 18, 15. Deuteronomy 18, 15. Deuteronomy 18, 15. Good. It says, the Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me. Got to stop. What does it mean, like me? God spoke to every prophet through visions and dreams except one. Moses, he talked to face to face. So this is going to be a prophet that God speaks to face, not through dreams and visions or indirectly. From your midst, which means he's got to be from the children of Israel. In fact, we learn later in the Old Testament, he's got to be from the tribe of Judah. He's got to be born in what town? Bethlehem. He's got to be raised in Nazareth, etc. It says, from your brethren, him you shall hear, according to all you desired of the Lord your God in Horeb in the day of the assembly. What's he referring to there? It's referring back to Exodus chapter 20. After the Lord spoke audibly the Ten Commandments, the people said, Lord, don't speak to us directly anymore. Speak to us through Moses, and we'll listen to him. So in verse 16, God says, I heard you. You don't want me to speak directly to you, that you will listen to my words that come through Moses. Well, this prophet's going to be like Moses. The words are going to come directly from the Lord. It says, saying, let me not hear again the voice of the Lord my God, nor let me see this great fire anymore, lest I die. A lot of people, I had this question in the last 2 weeks, think that the Torah refers just to the Ten Commandments. So we're going to have to go look at that in just a minute, but just keep that in mind. Don't let me forget to talk about that. Verse 17 goes on. Lord said to me, what they have spoken is good. I will raise up for them a prophet like you from among their brethren, and I will put my words in his mouth. What did John 14:24 say? And the words that you hear are not mine, but my Father who sent me. That was fulfillment of this prophecy. He shall speak to them all that I command him. And it shall be that whoever will not hear my words, which he speaks in my name, I will require it of him. That's another way of saying, whoever accepts Messiah will be saved, whoever rejects him will be lost. Okay, now while we're back in the Torah, let's go to the book of Exodus. Only because the question was raised in the last couple weeks, and if it was raised to me, likelihood is it'll get raised to you guys too. Exodus chapter 20, the Ten Commandments. That's just a title that they wrote over chapter 20 in my Bible. It's actually, if you read in the Hebrew, the ten words or the ten sayings. Ten sayings. Down to verse 18, though, after what we call the Ten Commandments, verse 18 says, now all the people witnessed the thunderings, the lightning flashes, the sound of the trumpet, and the mountain smoking. When the people saw it, they trembled and stood afar off, which means they're terrified. When it says they heard the thunderings, that's kolot, which is voices. That is, they all heard these commandments in their own languages, in their own ears. It says, then they said to Moses, you speak with us, and we will hear, but let not God speak with us, lest we die. And Moses said to the people, do not fear, for God has come to test you, that his fear may be before you, so that you may not sin. In other words, they will remember for all of their lives hearing the voice of God and the trumpets and the earthquakes and the fire upon Mount Sinai. They will never forget it. And when Moses speaks to them, they shouldn't be back there going, well, how do we know God really said this? Because they heard God speak, and they ask Moses to ask God not to speak directly anymore, but through him. So verse 21 says, so the people stood afar off, but Moses drew near the thick darkness where God was. Then the Lord said to Moses, thus you shall say to the children of Israel, you have seen that I have talked with you from heaven. You shall not make anything to be with me, gods of silver or gods of gold, you shall not make for yourselves. And by the way, while God's saying this, what are they making down there? A golden calf. Yeah. So Exodus chapter 20 is very clear. It's not that there were only 10 commandments that God had for us. That's all the people were willing to hear directly and said, let the rest come through Moses. Back to 2 Corinthians chapter 1. Remember, there are believers at the church at Corinth, at least they call themselves believers, that say Paul is not qualified to be an apostle. So in verse 1, Paul says, Paul, an apostle of Yeshua the Messiah by the will of God, which means I didn't get up one day and say, maybe I need to change careers and become an apostle. Why don't I do that? That sounds like fun. No, Paul says it was by the will of God. What does he mean it was by the will of God? How does he know?
He spoke face to face.
Let's go look. Where does God speak face to face with Paul? On the Damascus Road. It's in the book of Acts, chapter 9. Why doesn't he just tell him to go read the book of Acts? Hasn't been written yet. Acts chapter 9, verse 3. As he journeyed, he came near Damascus. Oh, let me ask an aside. If he's traveling from Jerusalem to Damascus, what road does he have to travel? Answer is the Damascus Road. We all know that. That road goes out the northern gate, and it goes right past the side of the road where Messiah would have been crucified. Romans didn't crucify up on hills far, far away. They crucified by the edge of the road where everybody walking into and out of the city can see, to be afraid and be warned. Okay, verse 3. As he journeyed, he came near Damascus, and suddenly a light shone around him from heaven. He fell to the ground, heard a voice saying to him, Shaul, Shaul, which is Saul, why are you persecuting me? He said, who are you, Lord? He knows the voice from heaven, but he doesn't know why God would be saying, you're persecuting me. He thinks he's on this journey to please the Lord, right? He thinks he's doing God a favor. What did the Lord say in Matthew 24? There'll come a time when they think when they persecute you, they're doing God a favor. Yeah. So who are you, Lord? Then the Lord said, I am Yeshua, whom you are persecuting. It is hard for you to kick against the goads. So he, trembling and astonished, said, Lord, what do you want me to do? Then the Lord said, arise, go into this city. You'll be told what you must do. The men who journeyed with him stood speechless, hearing a voice, but seeing no one. Well, it's because there wasn't anybody there. The voice was coming from heaven. Then Saul, or Shaul in Hebrew, rose from the ground. When his eyes were open, he saw no one, but they led him by the hand and brought him into Damascus. He saw no one because he's blind. And he was 3 days without sight. It's another way of saying blind. Neither ate nor drank. There was a certain disciple at Damascus named Ananias, and to him the Lord said in a vision, Ananias, he said, here I am, Lord. The Lord said to him, arise and go to the street called Straight, inquire of the house of Judas for one called Saul of Tarsus, for behold, he's praying. In a vision, he has seen a man named Ananias coming in and putting his hand on him so that he might receive sight. Go down to verse 15. But the Lord said, go, for he is a chosen vessel of mine to bear my name before Gentiles, kings, and the children of Israel. So who assigned Paul the duties of being an apostle?
Yeshua
did himself. Okay, back to 2 Corinthians chapter 1.
How about it?
Yeah, but go ahead.
Up in verse 5, it said it is hard for you to kick against the goad.
Yes.
What's that?
A goad was a little stick that the shepherds used when the sheep or goats were being too pokey. They would peck against the back of the leg to encourage them to go on. And sometimes the animals would kick that goad. And it would hurt the animal. So the Lord's saying, it's painful to kick against the goat. The Lord's going to give him a direction to go, even though Paul hasn't been wanting to go that way. Mm-hmm. Paul's going to go where the Lord directs him, even if he don't like it.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Back to 2 Corinthians chapter 1. Paul, apostle of Yeshua the Messiah, by the will of God, and Timothy, our brother. We were just reading about Timothy in 1 Corinthians. Timothy is considered Paul's son in the faith. He says, Timothy, our brother. He's the one that he told the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 16, don't mistreat him just because he's young. To the church of God, which is at Corinth. Notice it's to the church of God, not the church of Yeshua. Yeshua directed all worship to the Father. So to the church of God, which is at Corinth, with all the saints who are in all Achaia, that is Athens and Cenchrea, those areas. Grace to you and peace. Grace is a Greek greeting. Peace is a Hebrew greeting. So he wants anybody in the congregation at Corinth to feel welcomed. Grace to you and peace from God our Father and the Lord Yeshua the Messiah. That verse says a whole lot more than most people realize. You see that word from? That's the Greek word apo, and it's singular. If it was from God and Jesus, these two people, it would be the wrong word. So it is a clear statement of the divinity of Yeshua, that he's not separating God the Father from Yeshua the Messiah. He's lumping them together. As the Lord said, I and my Father are one. In what chapter of John does he say that? I and my Father are one. John chapter 10. It's in the portion that begins with John 10:22. He was in Jerusalem at Hanukkah. This was the great revelation he makes at Hanukkah, which is called the Festival of Lights. And he reiterates the fact that he is the light of the world. He is the one referred to in John chapter 1, verses 1 through 14. So verse 2, grace to you and peace from God our Father and the Lord Yeshua the Messiah. It's one greeting, singular. So it's a unequivocal statement of Yeshua's divinity. And unfortunately, we have run out of time. So, or at least that's unfortunate from my point of view. I don't know about yours. But next week we'll pick up, Lord willing, in 2 Corinthians chapter 1 with verse 3.